Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning, Jill. What a beautiful day today. Beautiful February day.
That's true. And the good news about, the only good news in my view about February is a couple of birthdays and the fact that it's obviously getting lighter.
Yes, we'll day length is what it's all about.
That's true. And after the second, it's a happy thing. All right. Douglas in Canaan wants to know. We have tons of questions. Douglas in Canaan wants to know, I have a 4-year-old Manchester Terrier mix. I notice that when he first gets out of bed in the morning, he seems a little bit stiff until he's had some time to stretch and walk around. I'm 35 myself, and that's true for me too, so I figure it's just part of being an adult, whether you're a man or a dog. True, or is Maxwell too young to need limbering up in the mornings?
So that's a bit of a fine line. I think that all dogs will do some stretching when they get up. You know, my dogs definitely do every day, stretch their back, stretch their hind legs, downward dog, and then they're ready to go. So if that's the case, I would say that this is probably absolutely fine. If it's a change from what you saw 6 months ago, that maybe he takes a little bit longer to start moving in the morning and isn't ready to go after a couple of stretches, then it can mean that there's something going on. And my suspicion would be with one of the tick-borne diseases. Dogs sometimes don't manifest those really acute symptoms with fever and all of that, but they will have more subtle symptoms. So that might be something that you want to consider having him tested for.
Yeah, and one of the things that you also raised that's just interesting is the main thing, and I always, you know, usually within 2 minutes of the show, I lapse into civilianness, and the main thing is people don't necessarily notice changes as readily as they,
and that is so significant.
Yeah, because you just get used to a certain thing, so yeah, I guess I'm talking about incremental changes, which are more helpful than like, oh, my dog isn't eating anymore. Yeah, he started slowed down about 2.5 weeks. You know, I'm talking about if people can just as a regular basis with whoever their animal is or whoever they are, notice the little things.
And when it's something, if it has nothing to do with tick-borne disease, it may be something as simple as just the inflammation in his body, and why is that, and is there something different that you're feeding? You're feeding a lot of starches, so those are the things to think about. But 4-year-old Manchester Terrier should be like a rocket in the morning after a couple of stretches.
Right.
So I think that something to think about whether this is a big change for him or even a little change.
Right. Okay, good. Catherine in the city, New York City, on a really cold day, like single-digit cold, I worry about whether I should be making my dog wear a sweater or coat. She's a 5-year-old setter lab mix with medium-long fur. She absolutely hates to wear any kind of clothing, but on a walk, her fur is cold to the touch, so should I force it?
The answer to that, is pretty much no, as long as you keep moving. So if you're going to be tying her outdoors while you go into a store, then absolutely. But otherwise, if you're going to keep moving and she doesn't want to wear a sweater and she's not trembling or standing still and picking up her feet or refusing to go with you, then most likely, even though her fur is cold to touch, it's warm on the inside. So the nice thing about fur is that it lets air in between the top layers and the skin, and that air gets warmed by the body and then helps to keep them warm. So I would not say that that she needs a coat at this point, especially being fairly young. I think you'll know if you have a dog who's trembling or has, you know, if the temperature goes below 10, then a coat might be necessary. But, you know, a really lightweight, they make them like a lightweight fleece all the way up to your, you know, heavy winter coat. So something lightweight to help hold in the heat and then work your way up from there.
Right. But but I do think an interesting point is if they hate it, I mean,
right.
Then that's something to factor in as well.
Absolutely. If they hate it, usually it's because it's making them too hot.
Right. I always thought it was because mine were klutzy, but yeah, it's probably that.
I think it just is uncomfortable. Yeah. Makes them too hot.
No, I'm actually going to go with your answer rather than mine. It's like, oh yeah, that's a whole new way to look at it. All right. This is Spencer and Dave in Great Barrington. In spring, we bought a one-year-old Himalayan cat from a breeder. And this past November, she had a litter of kittens that sadly were stillborn. Our vet said that her life would not be in danger if we should choose to breed her again, but we have misgivings. Is it hard on a cat, psychologically or physically, to have this experience? Do you think we should have her spayed, or do you think it would be safe to try one more time?
I think if she's in good shape and you have good veterinary care, regular veterinary care throughout the pregnancy, then it should be fine. You know, the question is what was this? Why was the litter born stillborn? And there are diseases that can cause that. So, you know, if your veterinarian's right on top of that, I'm assuming you would be taking your Himalayan back to the breeder to be bred to a Himalayan in a safe way, not letting her outside, of course. Then, as long as she's in good shape after the first litter, then, you know, I don't think that you're adding too much danger. What I can say is that it's possible that she may need maybe a cesarean section. So you have to be prepared for that, as long as she's getting good veterinary care. So you may want to, number one, have a conversation with your veterinarian about what might have caused this and have her tested for varying things if it's indicated. And then if you, if she's negative for those things and there's no, there are no health concerns, so general lab work, et cetera, then, you know, having her, as long as she's quite young, having her have another litter is an okay thing. If that's what you're looking for, hopefully you would already have homes for those cats. Because you don't want to have kittens come into the world that don't have homes. So, you know, if you're looking at maybe keeping them, that's great. Make sure that you have people who want to buy them or take them in.
Right. All right. And I'm just, there's such a plethora of testing going on for everything in this day and age that I wonder, how much testing is too much? Like, you want to just do basic testing or do you basically want to have their, like, genes?
You know, oh no. You know, I off the top of my head, I can't say the last time that I've had a purebred cat actually bred on purpose, not at a breeder's. So, I off the top of my head, I can't think of those things that might cause stillbirth. But I would certainly, you know, have that conversation with your vet and say, is there anything that might be leading to this? Because you don't want to go through that again, and you don't want to put her through that again. So is it maybe advisable, speak to the breeder, is it advisable to use a different male as the sire of these kittens? And, you know, is everything okay with my kitty? Because if that's not the case or you have doubts, then having her spayed would be the way to go. And you definitely want to have her spayed as soon as you're done having your litter.
Right. And the other thing, Spencer and Dave, I'm just looking at the question more closely, and I can't tell that she didn't get caught, let's just say, in the backyard. It's not clear.
Yeah, so that we don't need to bring mixed, in my opinion. We don't need to bring mixed breed more kittens. kittens everywhere.
So
they need homes.
So if that were the situation, just as far as this question goes, gentlemen, then maybe you want to review that before
Chrissy. Yeah, especially since she is could catch all kinds of diseases from a stray male cat. So, you know, that's why I'm thinking that it's probably not the case, but something to think about. And, you know, these wonderful, we do have these wonderful breeds, and I have nothing against propagating those breeds. They're, you know, of dogs and cats. I think it's kind of a nice thing as long as we do it responsibly.
All right. Campbell in New Haven, I recently declined my vet's offer to give my Airedale Jimmy a booster shot for kennel cough. I didn't see the point because Jimmy doesn't spend any time confined with other dogs. But I just read on the internet that kennel cough can be spread by people petting dogs. Is that really true? Also, is kennel cough so bad that you can't just let your dog recover from it? I mean, is the vaccine more like a flu shot or more like a heartworm preventative? Jimmy is 6, if that matters.
So that's a good question. I mean, it is more like a flu shot. It's you know, offers protection against getting really sick. It isn't. Kennel cough is infectious tracheobronchitis, and so depending on the immune status of your pet, they can actually get over it. But I can tell you that it's maybe a week or more sometimes if you're not sleeping because your dog is coughing, coughing, coughing. It's a lot for them to go through. The cough is very honking and uncomfortable, and it's hard to control. So it is definitely worthwhile doing that kennel cough vaccine once a year. The maker of the vaccine says if you do the booster once a year, it offers basically with that, unless you're doing the injectable form, you're doing an oral or an intranasal vaccine that is offering some local immunity in the tissues around the mouth and naso and oral pharynx that will help to prevent the transmission of disease into the body. And so it's droplets, you know, it's aerosol that causes the exchange from one pet to another. Potentially could be spread by people, but I think that you would have to be sort of sneezed on, coughed on by a dog who has kennel cough, and then let another dog lick your hand, you know, that kind of really close contact. I don't think it's something that, certainly if you worked in a ward full of dogs who have kennel cough and who are coughing on you, you'd want to change your clothes before you went home. But it's not super contagious by fomites, which are things that are not things like clothes and hands and so forth. That being said, it's a simple vaccine that can prevent some, if your dog is around other dogs. So if your dog is not and doesn't ever sniff noses with other dogs, and just goes outside in your yard, it may not be something that's necessary, but it doesn't have to be in a kennel. Transmission doesn't have to take place in a kennel or enclosed area. It can take place at the walking down the street. If your dogs go nose to nose, if they're off leash on a walk, or if they're at the dog park.
Right, and I think the key words in this question, and of course, being called kennel cough, you can understand why, is confined with other dogs. And then we jump to spread by people petting dogs. And I think that what's left out, so I would say to Campbell in New Haven, listen carefully to Dr. Cannon's answer, is that what's left out is just regular interaction with a dog who might, you know, have a cough. And if you're, if Jimmy hangs out or, you know, just goes walking, if you guys walk down the road, then, you know, then maybe it's a different story. If Jimmy has a friend who comes visiting or anything like that.
Right. It's a little bit, you know, one of those things that can be transmitted before a dog is quite sick, too. So that's where you get a little bit iffy. You might be not hearing a dog coughing at the dog park, and they might be coming down with it. And so potentially your dog could get it. And it is not very commonly a deadly disease, but it makes your pet really sick. You know, they can get very, very ill, and they don't sleep, and you don't sleep for a week, and it is a nothing that you want to live through, believe me.
I think that's an answer right there. All right. Haley in North Adams. My mystery mixed pupper Delilah occasionally likes to eat mud. I notice that it has a laxative effect. Is this why? If it is, should I be giving her something in her food?
This is a very interesting question, and there are dogs out there who love to eat mud, and I don't really know why they do. I think that their personalities, the ones I've met, personalities tend to be a little bit compulsive, so I always suspect that that's something, but I don't see that it is actually has a laxative effect. It's not something that I typically hear from people. I think it is something that they decide is a fun thing to do and makes quite the mess. But you can always make sure that your dog is on a good diet and make sure that if you have questions about whether they're getting everything they need, is to make sure that they're on a good vitamin mineral supplement on a daily basis if you have a dog who's eating things that they shouldn't, things that are not food. Is a good idea to start with, but I tell you that I haven't had much luck with even changing diets, et cetera. It's usually, usually a compulsive kind of a problem. So trying to prevent it is the best thing that you can do because any of those issues will worsen with time if they're allowed to continue.
Which reminds me of the wonderful Spanish people who many, many years ago, I had a dog who ate walls. And,
Walls?
Yeah, walls.
Uh-huh.
Walls. And it was Thanksgiving. I mean, literally decades ago. It was the wonderful Diesel Goodman. And the woman
that
said...
That can be expensive.
Not only can it be expensive, but she said, you know, are you sure he doesn't have a chalk, a calcium issue?
Yeah, those are always interesting thoughts, and so typically we'll go through a blood workup and then talk about other issues that might be causing anxiety and what in fact are you feeding and kind of depends on whether you have a young dog. If it's a young dog who's doing it, they tend to assimilate foods quite well, but if it's causing diarrhea, I don't think that that's why she's eating the mud. I think that that is a side effect of it. The question is, why would she be eating it and why, or mud or anything? Some dogs will just eat dry dirt. Some dogs will just eat moss. They get fixated on a particular oral, it's sort of an oral fixation.
I have a dog that eats snow currently. And it's just so annoying because he doesn't understand that his need to pee is directly proportionate to the amount of snow that he eats.
Right.
And he also doesn't understand that sometimes there's salt and stuff. He just thinks it's the duckiest, and I would like to go on record as saying I disagree. All right, the herons in Winstead. Our cat is one of those orange tabbies that has always been on the tubby side. He is 6.5 and neutered. Lately, he is looking a little strange. His back is very thin. You can see his spine showing through, but his stomach is still fatter than ever. What could be causing this?
It is definitely abnormal for the muscle loss over the spine so that those spinous processes are protruding and you can see them. And that is something that should be, for a six-year-old kitty, should be investigated by your veterinarian. So it's possible that he's losing weight all over and maybe has some fluid in his abdomen. Lots of things can cause fluid in the abdomen, and so it's something to have investigated and have some lab work, and a good physical exam can help with that. Definitely something that I would address right away.
Okay. Ed in Poughkeepsie, I got a pound puppy about 30 years ago, and I remember they treated him for kennel cough, or back to kennel cough, before they adopted him out, but I never gave it a thought after that. A few years ago, I got a Bernese Mountain Dog puppy. The vet added Bordetella to his roster of shots. That made sense, but it feels like I'm getting a reminder every 10 minutes to give him booster shots for it. I thought kennel cough was a mild illness like a cold. Do they really need booster shots for it? And anyway, I thought the whole point of kennel cough was that they got it in a kennel, i.e. enclosed spaces with other dogs. We addressed that. I don't kennel my dog, so I'm not getting what the point is. Maybe we should rename this.
Well, I think that, the one thing that I didn't touch on before was the the frequency of vaccination. So it is recommended to do once a year. It's not that kind of a vaccine that holds immunity for long periods of time because it offers this local immunity. So that's not surprising at all. But now in New York City especially, there have been recommendations to perform that vaccine twice a year because of if your dog is doing any daycare is really the thing. Everybody's got their dogs in daycare now. So if we've got, you're walking on the street and exposing your dog to other dogs there, but the daycare, which is a wonderful, don't get me wrong, I think it's a really life quality enhancing thing that's happening with daycare. These dogs, instead of staying home, they get to go and play. But you have to be careful of these contagious diseases. And some dogs won't, even if exposed, they won't get it. But it is a little bit more than, as I said, like a cold, and can make them pretty sick. So I think it's worth keeping up on it. Do they actually need it twice a year? I don't know. What I can say is if the vaccine company is saying it's fine to do once a year, then it seems like overkill for me to do it every 6 months.
Question, is it something that can be titered or not?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's something to look at in the vaccination department, the over vaccination department, just because. And I think that this is just opinion, but a lot, we touched on it a couple of shows ago. There's a real industry that's springing up around this. And do you think it's worth having a conversation with your veterinarian about? I'm just thinking about new pet parents. Mm-hmm. Obviously want their babies to go to daycare and have the best possible experience, and they don't want anything to happen to them. Mm-hmm. But there's also the over, I just think that you need a cool vet that you can talk to, given the just prevailing anxiety level about every little thing.
Right. You have to, I always say this on the show, is that you have to consider the risk. So, if you're not doing any of those things and you are just walking your dogs on leash and you're not going to let them sniff noses with a lot of other dogs, and you live in the country, so do you really need to have a Bordetella vaccine? And probably the answer is no. Depends on what the risk is and what risk are you willing to take.
Which is, as we always get to, the story of life. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440. MillertonVet.com. Who let the dogs out? Who?